Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah v'chein shar kol hanashim. Gemara says Bishlama yivama kidamran. We explained already why you have to wait the 3 month period between the time that the original husband passed away and the Yabam comes to perform Yibam over here because of a number of issues, both with regards to the performance of Chalitza as well as the performance of Yibum. Ela shar kol hanashim amai. But when it comes to other women, why are you waiting between the time that the husband passed away and the time that she remarries? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Shum da Amar Kura, the Pasuk says, Liot lecha lelukim, ulezaracha acharecha, that I will be your God, and your descendants after you. Lavchin ben zaro shel rishon, lezaro shel sheni. It's simple, the buffer is placed here in order that we know where this child belongs to the first father, or the child belongs to the second father. Now, truthfully, mimonavshach, the child is kasher. We're not talking about a problem of psul, but we do want to know who the father of this child is. And the reason for that is the pasuk that we find here by Abraham that says that only those that are miyuchasim, there's a shechina shura aleihem. And that's what Rashi says here. Shein shechina shura el avadaim shezero miyuchas acharav. That you have to know the parents, you have to know the father. Tosafot mentioned this before when we discussed the problem of Yibum, that individual who didn't wait the buffer time and the child is born, Mimonavshach, that child is kasher and can be the Kohen Gadol. Tosafot said still he's missing this one aspect over here, this aspect of Zaro Miuchas Acharav. So there Tosafot says maybe Zaro Miuchas Acharav is only a din derabonon. And that happens to be a machloket in the Achronim over here, as well as this din is just an asmachta bi'alma, and therefore it's a din derabonon that we're sumach on the pasuk. Well, this is a real din that's learned out of the pasuk by Abraham, that zaro miyuchas acharav is a demand midoraita, that we know who the parents are and we know who the father is. But because of that, we want to have a buffer between the first husband who passed away and the new husband in order to know who is the father of this child. Meitiv rovo lefikach. Ger v'giorit tzrichim lamtim gimel chodashim. Says, based on our Mishnah, we said that a convert, both a woman and a man who converted, have to wait 3 months. That's what it says here. You can see from this gemara over here that a ger is allowed to marry a giorit. But more importantly, they have to wait 3 months. If you're saying the whole reason here is to determine whether the child is born to the first husband or the second husband, over here the husband's not changing. The husband was the husband before, he's the husband afterwards. They just converted together. So when it says, Achanami, Yigal Avchin, Ben Zeresh and Nizrabik Dusha, the Zeresh alone Nizrabik Dusha. We want to know if the child was conceived when the parents are already converted, or prior to the time that the parents converted. This has nafkaminot with regards to certain halachot, including whether, if it's a daughter, she is Re'uyalikuna, only if she's Nizrabik Dusha, if she was conceived Bik Dusha, is she Re'uyalikuna, might have impact in terms of Yerusha, that a ben who is not Nizrabik Dusha may not be entitled to Yerusha. And others suggest whether there's any Yichus then associated with this child if there's no Zriabik Dusha, if it wasn't conceived to Kusha. So therefore, there is a reason also here to put in a buffer of 3 months from the point of time that they converted, so we can know whether the child was conceived prior to their conversion or the child was conceived after their conversion. Rava offers an alternative explanation as to why we wait this buffer of 3 months. Gzeira shemi yisa et achoto me aviv. This whole problem here, or this whole reason to wait the period of time, is so that he knows which father is his father, and then he knows who his brothers and sisters are. Because otherwise you have a risk here, which first of all, he might marry his achoto, his sister from his father. He'll think he was born to the second husband, and truthfully, he was really the son of the first husband. And he'll marry a daughter that was born to the first husband from another woman. So they have no common parent here, therefore they're not related. But the truth is, he really was the child of the first marriage. If that's the case, then this sister and brother share a common father, and they really are brother and sister. So you have a risk here of them misinterpreting what happened or who their parents are. And in doing so, you might have a brother and sister get married. Or v'yibayim ishad achiv mi'imo. Or the same situation again, where he thinks that he was born to the second parent, and he was not born to the first parent. And he has a brother from that second marriage. Now, all of a sudden, that brother from the second marriage passes away without any children, and he performs Yibum. But the truth is that only a person who can perform Yibum is someone who shares a common father. Over here, he really was the child of the first marriage. So they share a common mother. They are brothers through the mother, but they are not brothers through the father. And therefore, he's Eshet Achiv Mimo, which disqualifies him from Ibo. Or V'yotzi Et Imo Deshuk, the same problem where he'll allow his mother to go out to the Shuk. They'll think again that he's a child of the second husband. And therefore, when their second husband passes away and they have no children from the second marriage, they'll think that this child was from the second marriage and she'll go out and be freed from any Ibum or Chalitza because she has a child. Meantime, he was really a child from the first marriage. And therefore, she had no children from the second marriage and she's up for Ibum or Chalitza and she'll go get married even though she never got released from the Ibum. Or Viftorit Yivimto, the Shuk. Or he will call his own Yivama to be throughout the Shuk because he will have, for instance, no brothers that were born from the second marriage. And there was a brother who was from the first marriage. Meantime, they think he's from the second marriage, and they are not brothers through the father, only brothers through the mother. But the truth is that he was really from the first marriage. And now if he passes away without any children, his brother from the first marriage should have performed Ibum over here. And meantime, his Yivama is going to go out to the Shuk without anything, because they think he is from the second marriage, and they're only related through the mother. Because of all these problems, we want to know for certain whether he's from the first marriage or the second marriage, in order that we don't run into these problems of Arayot. And Rashi notes that Rava's reasoning then also will apply to Ger and Giorit as well, at least in one of the manifestations, which is that Ikon HaMeichash Gagon L'Shema Yebeim Eshet Achiv Mi'imo, that you might have the same problem about brothers, because maybe she was pregnant, and when she gives birth, she thinks that it was a Ben Zion, so therefore he was conceived B'Kedusha. And then she has another child who was literally conceived B'Kedusha, so she thinks that they are brothers, and then he gets married and dies without any children, and then he will perform Yibum thinking that they were both conceived B'Kedusha, but the one who is conceived Shelo B'Kedusha may not be his brother, and as Rashi says over here, because Stam Ovedet Kochavim is a Zona, it was before the time that she was Mitgayeret, and therefore we're not even certain that the father of this child is actually the man that's married to her. It could be another individual who is the father of this child. And then he'll end up marrying Eshet Achiv Mi'imo, because the only common parent between them is the mother, not the father, because the child before she converted was a result of an extramarital affair. And so therefore you're going to have this huge problem that arises, and that's what Rava is Choshesh for, this issue of Nizra B'Kedusha and Nizra Shelo B'Kedusha. That's how Rashi extends Rava into the area of Ger and Gioret. It's not as simple as Rashi makes it out, because we saw before that the Gemara said with Ger and Gioret, that a Gioret, if she knows she's going to convert, she will not be Mizana, because she wants to ensure that the child that was born is Nizra B'Kedusha, and she will then desist from those types of practices. And if that's the case, it's less likely that she would become impregnated in that latter part of her process of conversion, because she already knows that she's heading in that direction. You'd have to say it happened prior to her knowledge of that. Again, it makes Rashi's explanation less convincing. So, Meitiv Rav Chananya Bikulan Ani Korei Behen Mishum Takanat Erva. In all these instances, the protection of these Mishnayot here against doing certain things is to protect against an Isur Arayot. Bikan, our Mishnah is Mishum Takanat Vlad. In this instance here that we're trying to protect against the child being problematic. Vimito, if Rava is correct over here, kulu mishum takanat erva. He's saying that even here in the case of the differentiation in the child, it's not to know who the child is, like we suggested before, that he is zaro is miyuchas, and therefore the shechina will be shorah on him. That's not what we're after here. We're really after a problem of erva, and it's to protect against arayot. So if that's the case, how can we make such a distinction, or how can the Braita make such a distinction between arayot and vlad? Now, Bikulan over here, this Bikulan, Rashi says Bikulan in all these instances before where we discussed these issues, where we said, Kol Anashim Shasru Chachamim Linaseh Lit Yabeim, all these instances where there were women that the Chachamim said may not get married or may not have Yibum, that's because of Arayot, between the parties involved. Tosafot, on the other hand, views that Bikulan over here means Ayivama Lachud Gai. Talking about Yivama over here, V'nakot Lashon Kulam Mishum Da'ari B'chol Yivamot. So it's using that plurality of Kulan, not because it refers to all the scenarios beforehand, like Rashi is suggesting over here, but it means all Yivamot. And that's the way Tosfot interprets it, a much narrower view of the word Bikulan over here. So the Braita states that in all these other cases, the problem was Arayot. Yet, over here, the protection of the 3 months is not for the parties involved, but rather for the child themselves to know who their parent is and to protect the child or take care of the child. But according to Rava, it's also a problem of erva. Rava says, that's not a problem. Hi, mishum takanat vlad, lo lefgu behu erva. The takanat vlad over here is not for the child to know that he's miuchas, but to protect the child from a problem varayot. All the other cases were cases where the protection was for the parties themselves from a problem of isar arayot. Over here, the protection is for the vlad from an isar arayot. So there is still a distinction between the parties themselves and the vlad. It both has to do with arayot, but it's whose problem of arayot is. In the other cases, the problem of arayot is for the participants. And over here, the problem is for the vlad himself. I understand why she can't just wait 2 months in order to remarry. Because that would generate exactly the problem that we're trying to avoid. If she only waits 2 months, then we have the problem that she might be 7 months from the second husband or 9 months from the first husband. Ibar Tisha the Kama, 9 months from the first husband, or Ibar Shiva the Batro, or 7 months from the second husband. Helatamtim Chodesh Echad. Why don't you just wait a month? Vitinasei, and then she can get married. Ve'ilas Shiva Yalda. If she gives birth after 7 months, Hai Bar Shiva the Batro, who? Then certainly that is a 7 month baby from the second one. Vila Tamnayo Yalda. If she gives birth after 8 months, Hai Bar Tisha the Kama, who? Then certainly this is a 9 month baby from the first husband, because 8 months, according to Chazal, that baby is not viable. So it can't be an 8 month baby from the second husband, because it wouldn't be viable otherwise. So it must be that it is a 9 month baby from the first husband. Gemara now says, if you just wait a month, you can accomplish that. Gemara says, that's not so true, because Inami, Letamnaya Yalda, maybe if she gives birth after 7 months, Igala Meimar, the Batrahu, maybe it came from the second husband. You just said before, well, if it's 8 months, it's for sure from the first husband, because an 8 month baby is not viable. So it must be a 9 month baby from the first husband. Dilma Ishtua Ishta, Chodesh Echad V'Aver. Maybe she waited a month. Not that she literally waited, but she did not become impregnated from the second husband until a month into their marriage. And in so doing, her baby that came out was really a 7 month baby, even though it was 8 months after she got married. And as Rashi points out here, that's just one of the many questions the Gemara could have asked over here. Because you could argue that Shiva Yalda, Igalamimar Bartisha the Kamahu, even if she gives birth at the 7 month point, it still could be a 9 month baby from the first one. It's just that she became impregnated a month before her husband passed away. But the Gemara has this question and moves on, but there are other questions here as well. Gemara says, V'tamtin shnei chodoshim u'mechsa, let her wait 2.5 months and that will be sufficient. V'tina say, Deila Shiva Yalda, if she gives birth after 7 months, da hai bar Shiva the Batra, who, for sure, if she gives birth after 7 months, it's a 7 month baby from the second one. Deila Shita u'palga Yalda, if she gives birth after 6.5 months, hai bar Tisha the Kamo, then for sure it's a 9 month baby from the first one. Di bar Batra, because if she was a baby from the second husband, conceived from that marriage, it would only be 6.5 months, and Barshito Paga Lochaye, a 6.5 month baby that was only in utero for 6.5 months, will not survive. Inami, the Gemara says, that's not such a good answer, because the Shito Paga Yalda, Igalamemer, the Batru, even in a case where it's a 6.5 month baby, it might be from the second marriage, because Damar Marzutra, Filaman Damar, Yuletet the Tet, and Yuletet the Mukutayim, Machloket about a woman who gives birth to a 9 month baby. Does that mean only if she carries it full term? Mean that a 9 month baby will only be born at full term? Or maybe when you have a 9 month baby, it might come mukutaim, once you enter into the 9th month, and therefore it could be less than 9 months. But that's a machloket. And Marzucha says, even according to the one who says that 9 month babies must go to full term, that's the only way they're going to be born, Yodala Zayin, Yoledet the mukutaim. A 7 month baby can be born not at full term of 7 months, but even in a partial way, even in 6 months and a little bit, that is still a viable baby, a viable entity. Shenehamar, because it says by Chana, by Elkanah, and the birth of Shmuel, by he the tekufat hayamim. So miut tekufot bet. The minimum number of tekufot in plural is 2 seasons. Miut yamim. The minimum of days in plural is 2. So that is 2 seasons, which are each 3 months. That's 6 months and 2 days. So therefore you have, for sure, you can see that a woman can give birth or have a pregnancy that lasts only 6 months and 2 days, and it's viable. So again, you can ask more questions here on the suppositions of the Gemara. The Gemara came up with one question and knocked it off. You could have asked about the same thing, that even if the baby's born at 7 months, it belonged to the first husband as well. Now the Gemara says, all right, v'tamtin mashu. Just wait a small amount of time. Now mashu doesn't literally mean a mashu. Rashi over here says a week or two. Tosafot over here says wait 3 days, at least a minimum of 3 days, because even after the husband passed away, if she had Beal with him right before he passed away, then there's a 3-day period in which the Zera is still viable and can impregnate the woman. So you have to wait at least that 3-day period to differentiate. But Vitina say, and they get married. V'chi malu shlosha chodoshim levatga. After 3 months, check her out and see if she's pregnant. And then we'll know. If she's already pregnant and it's Nikar, that came from the first husband. If it's not Nikar, then it's definitely from the second husband, because she's reached 3 months for sure for the first husband, but she hasn't reached 3 months for the second husband. That waiting period that you had, whether according to Tosfot it's a couple of days, according to Rashi it's a week or 2 weeks, that will diminish from the 3 months, and it won't be visible. Her pregnancy would not be visible. So Amar Rav Safrain, Bodkim et Nisuot Shaloit Ganu Abalihem. We don't do these types of intimate checks on the woman to see if she's pregnant, because that might turn off their husbands from the women. Over here, Rashi talks about what type of intimate checks they could have done, but that might be something that is offensive to the husband or disconcerting to the husband, so we don't want to do that. So when it says, V'nivdaka b'hilucha, why don't you check her by her walking? Rashi over here describes a test by which she walks in soft sand or soft areas, and we see how far she sinks in there. If she is her normal self, then she'll sink a certain amount. If she's pregnant, the weight of the vlad of the fetus will cause her to sink deeper, and we all know that she is pregnant. Now, it's a somewhat difficult, because this is all relative. I mean, you'd have to have some sort of benchmark to know what it was beforehand, or you have to find a woman who is the same size as her, and then figure out if she's sinking more or not. But that's the way Rashi says it. I would have suggested over here, hilucha is the nature of the way that she walks. That pregnant women tend to waddle, or have a slightly different gait because of their pregnancy. So let's look at that and see if we can determine from there. Amar Rami Bar Chama Isha Mechapatzma. That even when a woman is pregnant, she will cover up the pregnancy. According to Rashi is that she'll try to throw her weight so she doesn't sink in the ground. Or maybe with her walking, she'll keep her gait normal and she'll make a concerted effort not to look like she's pregnant. Kadesh Yirash Bina B'nichsei Bala. Because she wants her son to be attributed to the second husband, so that he will inherit the Yerusha of the second husband. So when it says, Eicha dekimlan demu bereti tinasei. Alright, so forget all this. We can't figure out whether she's pregnant, she's not pregnant, how much to wait. She's gotta wait 3 months. But in a situation where we know for sure she's pregnant, why don't then we let the new husband marry her? Because now we know for sure this baby belongs to the first husband, and there's no question she's already pregnant. So then, why don't we allow her to marry in that instance? So, lama. Tanyo, Loisa Damu Beret Chaviro, Menekid Chaviro. We have a braita that says a person may not marry his friend's pregnant wife or his friend's nursing wife. Vim Nasa, and if he does marry her, Yotzi V'Leyachzir Alamit. He has to divorce her, and he can't remarry her forever. It's a permanent divorce. That's a Knas Chachamim. So you see, the Chachamim do not allow him to marry the pregnant wife of his friend. Obviously, it could have been from a divorce, but the assumption being that it also could come about through the passing of that husband, and yet the Braita says unequivocally you cannot marry the pregnant wife of your friend. Where it says Gezeira Shematase Ubrasandal, the Gezeira that he might cause problems for the fetus. We discussed this earlier. Rashi earlier in the Masechta discusses the fact that possibly she can come impregnated a second time, which would put pressure on the first fetus. Tosfot at first says, well, you can't become impregnated twice, so he comes up with other possibilities. And then he talks about the possibility that the zero of the second husband would cause problems for the first baby. Whatever the issue is, the assumption being here that him being together with this woman would cause a problem for the baby. Where it says, Ihochli didei nami. If that's the problem, then that same problem should exist for the current husband. Even if the woman's married to her husband, she's pregnant, then she shouldn't be allowed to be together with her husband for the same reasons that you won't allow an outside individual, a third party, to marry her while she's pregnant. Where it says, according to the one who says that a husband can be together with his wife while she's pregnant, she has to use some form of contraception, then she'll use contraception by her husband. They will have rachamim and they won't allow the pregnancy to be terminated by this. Then minashamayim rachamu. Where it says, if you say that about the husband, Ochanami. According here too, with a third party, if she marries someone after her husband passes away and she's pregnant, the same thing should be true. Ilamandamar b'moch, b'moch. This new husband, she will only have intercourse with him with contraception. Or ilamandamar minashamayim rachamu. That you just ask for mercy from the heavens. So to over here, you'll daven and ask for mercy from the heavens, minashamayim rachamu. So that can't be the reason. Elamishum dechaso. Because of the problem of pressure. The engagement and intercourse will cause pressure on top of the fetus and will cause her to miscarry. Mar says, Yachi didei nami. Why don't you say the same thing about the husband himself? Why can the husband be together with his wife when she's pregnant? You have the same risk as when it's a third party. It says, Chayis Ilave, the husband who is the father of the child that she's impregnated will have some sort of mercy, consideration, and therefore would not put pressure on her. It says, Chachanami Chayis Ilave, no person's going to want to damage a fetus or kill a baby. They're going to have the same consideration or sensitivities to the woman being pregnant, just like the father of the baby is, so too will the next husband. Ella stami uberet the minika kaima. The problem here is that a pregnant woman, in the end, is going to have to end up nursing. And so the problem here is not about the pregnancy itself, it's about the nursing afterwards. And the issue here of allowing her to marry when she's pregnant and when she's nursing is because of the nursing. What we're worried about is the fact that she might become impregnated after, again, she gives birth while she's nursing. She'll become impregnated again, and that will take away her milk supply. And in taking away her milk supply, that will cause the death of the baby that was born, the new baby that's born, because now she has nothing to give the baby because her milk supply is dried up. I says, why don't you say the same thing by the husband? By the husband, why is he allowed to stay together with his wife after she gives birth? She might become impregnated again and cause a problem for the baby. With his own baby, he takes care of them with milk and eggs. The question of what this means, Rashi seems to indicate here that it's some sort of formula or replacement for the mother's nursing through eggs and milk. He's able to create a mixture that is similar to the mother's milk, and that's how he will do it. Or the others that suggest here that the woman herself will have to consume a larger amount of milk and eggs, which have white in them. And in their time, the Rishonim believed that the consumption of items of that color would increase her milk supply. And so she's going to have to consume more to maintain her milk supply, even though she is pregnant. Mar says, so, didonami, mismisal lebe beitzim v'chalav. Why don't you say the same thing with regards to if she's already pregnant before she gets married, and now it's a third party. We'll do the same thing with this formula, or this extra eating that she does, the new husband will provide for her. The husband won't give it to her. If it's his own child, then the husband will make the expenditure in order to take care of this child. But if it's not his own child, then he's not going to make this extra expenditure to provide the formula and all this extra food that she needs because it's not his child. So we're afraid that the child will lose out because she got married to this next individual. Where it says, "Litvanei liyorshim," why does she go then and make a claim against the husband, the previous husband's inheritors? Because she's entitled to money out of that estate to pay for this baby and to take care of this baby. A woman is conservative, less inclined to show up in Beit Din and to make a public issue of this and make demands for the money. And therefore, she would rather not show up in Beit Din and allow the baby to die. Not physically kill the baby, but could allow the baby to die because of the lack of sustenance, rather than for her have to appear in court and try to take on the Yorshim to get the money that she is entitled to. So because of that, that's why we do not allow someone to marry a pregnant woman, even though here you don't have the problem of havchana. You don't have the issue of determining whether it belongs to the first husband or the second husband. There's another issue, which is this problem of meneket, of a nursing mother. And we're worried about if you marry the woman while she's nursing, or if you marry while she's pregnant and she will end up nursing. In both those instances, there's a risk that she will become impregnated again, and that will cause a cessation in her nursing. And if that's the case, that first baby will suffer from the second pregnancy. So therefore we say, do not get married to her and prevent that issue from happening. After 24 months, as we'll discuss in tomorrow's daf, after 24 months, she is permitted to then marry because that's the standard time for a child to be weaned off the mother's nursing. And at that point, you don't have that risk anymore, especially since you also have the buffer of pregnancy. It will be close to 3 years before the child will be have to take off that nursing, or the milk supply will dry up, and that will be fine to sustain the baby. Why is a husband allowed to stay together with his wife? It's because the husband has a vested interest in the child, and therefore will put up the monetary needs in order to sustain the child that's born if there's some problem with the nursing because of a subsequent pregnancy. And now the Gemara goes back to something we mentioned in the Mishnah, which is the Mishnah says, Achat betulot v'achat be'ulot. So Gemara says, Hainihu betulot v'hainihu arusot. What's the difference between a betula, a woman who is a virgin, versus arusa, a woman who is getting married and has yet to consummate a marriage? Hainihu be'ulot. What's the difference between a bi'ula, a woman who's already had intercourse, v'hainihu nisuot, versus a woman who's kind of consummated marriage? All these seem to be two terms for the same person. You have to reread it like this. Achad betulot v'achad be'ulot. Doesn't matter if she's a betula or be'ula. Shinit aromelu onit garshu. Whether they were widowed or divorced. Ben mina irusim, ben mina nisuim. These aren't separate categories, rather a qualification of the first category. So erusin and nisuim are not extra categories. They are qualifications of the betula and the be'ula. Doesn't matter if it happened out of erusin or nisuim. In that case, we had the Tanakama's position, which is you have to wait 3 months, no matter what. And then we had Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi who argued on that. But the Mishnah is not giving you four different types of women, which is Betula, Be'ula, Arusa, and Nisua. Rather, it's telling you Be'ula and Betula, whether that was generated through Erusin or Nisuin, both of these women have the same din if they were widowed or if they were divorced. Rabbi Lazar lo al Beit Midrash. Rabbi Lazar did not attend the Beit Midrash on a given day. We discussed earlier maybe why he wasn't there, because of who was in charge there. He might have been older, it was beneath his dignity, or he might have been sick. He wasn't there on that day. Ashkechei the Rabbi Asi, he found Rabbi Asi Amalei, Mayam Ura Bonim Bebei Midrusha. Says, what did you guys learn today in the Beit Midrash? Amalei, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. We learned that Rabbi Yochanan says, Alocha ki Rabbi Yossi. The Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. He says that, Michlau di Chido Poligalei. You're saying the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi, suggesting that there's an individual argues on Rabbi Yossi, and therefore the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. Now we have a principle in general when it comes to Tanaim. Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, Halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda. Machloket Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha ke Rabbi Yossi. So certainly in an instance where it's Rabbi Yossi versus Rabbi Meir, the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. So in our Mishnah, the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi if you suggest that he's arguing on an individual. So is that what you're suggesting over here, that the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi? Because that's Alocha based on the Klalei Apsak. Now it's truthfully Tosfot says that the Gemara in other places, Midayek from here, that the Klalei Apsak do not apply, because here Rabbi Yochanan says Halacha Rabbi Yossi, even though that would have been the outcome anyway. So what you have to say here is that Halacha Rabbi Yossi means that he's arguing on Rabim. And if he's arguing on Rabim, then it's not so clear that the Halacha should be like Rabbi Yossi. Where it says, in, yes, he only argues on a Yachid, that Dat Yachid in our Mishnah, the Tanakam is a Dat Yachid. Ba'atanya, we have a Braita B'nichuta. This is a Braita that supports that understanding. In this part of her marriage, she used to run home to her parents' house. She was not by her husband's house for a long duration of time. Or she and her husband had been quarreling, and therefore they did not get together or had no intimacy. Or her husband was incarcerated. Her husband was too old or sick, and therefore he was unable to impregnate her. And the Groy adds in the additional thing, Oshaya Bala Biminidatayam. Her husband was traveling overseas. Oshaita hi chola. Or if she was sick, Oshipila achar mitat bala. Or she miscarries after her husband dies. Oshaita kara. Or she was unable to carry children because she had her uterus removed. Ozkena, she's too old to bear children. Oktana, she's too young to bear children. Oilonit. Or she has some sort of congenital problem that doesn't allow her to give birth, and she doesn't have a simanim that would say that she had reached maturity. Or she took some sort of medication or did something that makes it impossible for her to become pregnant. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir says in all these cases where it's clear that the baby is from the second one if she gets married because she wasn't together with her husband intimately for a good period of time where she's unable to become pregnant or he's unable to impregnate her, in all these situations, you still have to wait the standard 3 months. It's a standard 3 months, and where goes there, otu. All situations, you wait 3 months, even though in that situation in particular, there's not a need to wait. Rabbi Yehuda Matir Li'ares Vilinase Miyad. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're allowed to get engaged and get married immediately in all these cases, because there's no chashash of pregnancy. Similar to what Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, that when it comes to those that were arusot, they can have nisuin right away because there's no chance that they were pregnant except for the arusot in Yehuda. Now, but you have an interesting dynamic over here. Before Rabbi Yochanan Paskin Alocha ki Rabbi Yossi, and over here we're being a proof that it's a dat yachid arguing here, and the arguing parties are Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. So why didn't he say Alocha ki Rabbi Yehuda? So Rashi says that the reason that Rabbi Yochanan said Alocha ki Rabbi Yossi is because Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda agree. That's Rashi's shita that we saw earlier on. That's Rashi Shita that we saw earlier on the Mishnah, that Rabbi Yossi agrees with everything that Rabbi Yehuda said, except for the fact that he adds in this aspect of Avelut, which an Amanah can't get married within that 30-day period, but otherwise he completely agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore Rabbi Yochanan is a halacha Rabbi Yossi because Tamo v'nimoko v'imo. The Gemara in other places says that Rabbi Yossi's position is a very strong position because his reasoning and his Mishnayot carry a lot of weight. And so because of that, he'd rather say Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi than Alocha k'Rabbi Yehuda, even though he could have also said Alocha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Now, that would explain why the Girsa is different over here. There is an alternative Girsa in Ketubot that says Rabbi Yossi over here. Once you've done that, Rashi's question goes away because Rabbi Yochanan said Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi because he found the Braita that says it's Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi arguing, and therefore he said Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi. But even without that, Tosafot says that he thinks Rashi is right over here, and he's not so comfortable with the Rabbeinu Tam, who changes the Girsa, and the Rabbeinu Tam changes the Girsa and the Braita to make it that it's not like Shita to Rabbi Yehuda. And with the Girsa of Rabbi Yossi over there in that Braita, he suggests that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda's positions are actually differentiated. And therefore, since their positions are differentiated, Rabbi Yochanan said Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi, not like Rabbi Yehuda, because they don't have the same opinion. We saw earlier that the Rishonim argued on Rashi as to whether Rabbi Yossi and the Mishnah agreed with Rabbi Yehuda except for this case, or he disagreed with him on a broader set of issues. And that's a machloket here between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, but Tosafot himself even thinks that it's hard to change the Girsaot to match what Rabbeinu Tam says, and therefore he favors Rashi's explanation as well. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Chazer bar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says Rabbi Yochanan retracted this position that the Aloch is k'Rabbi Yossi. Amar Rabbi Yossi, if he held or bay, if he did retract the position, it's mimatnitin de karma hadarbei. It's because of the braita from Karen Biavno that he retracted it, not because of the braita that you brought. The Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Benosha Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. These are the Tanaim who are found in Karen Biavno. Shemati mipi hachachamim. I have a mesorah from the chachamim be Karen Biavno. Kulan tzrichon amtin shlosha chadashim. Everybody has to wait 3 months. And here you see that it's a dat rabim, not just a dat Rabbi Meir. If that's the case, that's why you can't say Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan retracted his position, saying the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. Amrele Rabbi Yirmiya, the Rabbi Zrika. Rabbi Yirmiya says to Rabbi Zrika, Ki ayel dekameh de Rabbi Abo, when you visit Rabbi Abo, Ramile, ask him this question. Mi amr Rabbi Yochanan Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi? Did Rabbi Yochanan say the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan Alocha k'stam Mishnah? Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say the Alocha is like a stam Mishnah? And our Mishnah here in Yevamot is a stam Mishnah. So if you say Alocha k'stam Mishnah with regards to the other Nashim, that would mean you have to wait 3 months no matter what. How is Rabbi Yochanan over here saying Alocha k'Rabbi Yossi that you don't have to wait in these situations? But tanan, our Mishnah called Nashim le'nasu v'le'itasu achei lehem shlosha chodeshim, achat bitulot, achat bi'ulot. So that's our Mishnah. Amalei. So when he got there, Rabbi Zrika to Rabbi Abba, when he presented that question, Amalei, derami locha lochash l'kimchei. Whoever asked you this question doesn't worry about his flour or what he mills. Rashi says over here, the mashu tochenu motzi mipiv. He doesn't worry about what comes out of his mouth. He's not so careful because the question makes no sense. This question, and he'll explain why in a second. Others say that he's not chash for his Torah. Kemach is Torah. He's not chash for his Torah. He's not so careful of the fact that he asked this type of question. Or lo chash the kimche is that he doesn't even taste his food. There's a guy that just pours it down, doesn't check out what he's saying. Because stam v'achar kach machlogeti. It's a stam mishnah that is followed up with a machloket afterwards. Ve'in alocha k'stam mishnah. When Rabbi Yochanan says alocha stam mishnah, that's when we only have a mishnah that doesn't have attribution, and then we say the alocha is like that stam mishnah. But if you have a stam mishnah without attribution, then afterwards there's a machloket brought down on the same topic, that means that it's stam. And then achakach machloket, that means that machloket is coming to shed light on the previous stam mishnah to say it's not a stam mishnah. And since it's not a stam mishnah, therefore, the halacha is not like his stam mishnah. The amar of papa v'item Rabbi Yochanan machloket v'achachach stam. If the mishnayot have an order in which there's a machloket brought down, and then afterwards Rabbi made a stam mishnah afterwards, then that stam mishnah is governing. That means the Rabbi said, this is the machloket, and I'm pushing in one direction on the machloket. I made a decision that I think this opinion is better, and therefore the halacha is like that stam mishnah. On the other hand, if it's a stam achachach machloket, that means the Rabbi says, you know, that stam mishnah you saw before, that's really not an opinion of the rabbim. There's actually a machloket about it. And there's a dat yachid that's associated with that, or there's a different dat associated with it. And therefore, you can't govern it by the regular rules of stam mishnah. Now, some will say that it is still a stam mishnah when you have a stam v'achakach machloket. It's just that the principle of Rabbi Yochanan of halacha k'stam mishnah no longer applies. And you have to use other klalei apsak to decide who the halacha is like over here. Not that it's not called a stam mishnah anymore. It is a stam mishnah. It's just that it's not a stam mishnah subject to the ruling of Rabbi Yochanan. So there are rishonim like the Ramban that explain it that way, versus other rishonim that say stam machloket is not called a stam mishnah anymore. And so in this case here, we have a stam mishnah that's followed by a machloket. But if followed by a machloket means that ain't alocha k stam mishnah. And that question about Rabbi Yochanan's two different psikskei alocha, they're not contradictory. Because we see in our Mishnah right afterwards, you have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi arguing on our Mishnah. So it's clearly a Stam v'acharkach machloket. How far we say Stam v'acharkach machloket is a machloket amongst the Amoraim, then inside of the Rishonim as well. Which is, do we only say it within a single Masechta? Do we only say it within a single Seder? Or do we say it no matter where it's found, that the order matters? And again, we'll get into this a little more tomorrow, discussing this issue. So we're going to stop here, six lines from the bottom of Membet Amudbet.